Halloween, Silver Shamrock. That's from the famous fucking Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. What a fucking shitty Halloween film. I have to say, I love John Carpenter. I love his oeuvre. I think he's a brilliant fucking director, underrated writer, even underrated soundtrack producer. But here's the deal, folks. Halloween 3 sucked. In fact, the only thing... Hold on a second here. The only thing good about Halloween 3... and I think it was Halloween 3 in 3D. Which is weird when you think about it. But yeah, the only thing cool about Halloween 3... Season of the Witch... The only thing good about that movie is that fucking jingle. I love it. I love that jingle. That jingle has gotten me through many years. It is fucked up and absurd. One more day till Halloween. 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 One more day till Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Fuck. It is October the 30th. 2019, Halloween Eve of Halloween Eve, or Eve of Halloween Eve, which is truly twice over the Eve of Dios de los Muertos, November the 1st. But anyways, today is the day before Halloween, and really, you just gotta be really excited about this pagan holiday where you get to go out and get some candy, get some high fructose corn syrup chocolate. But please, as you're consuming your chocolates, remember this. All of the candies exist while supplies last. Order now while supplies last. While supplies last, you need to order now because who knows how long supplies will last. Make sure you get to the store in time to buy that new special item for your wife or husband. While supplies last. Make sure you get that inhaler for your kid that has asthma. While supplies last. Make sure you get to the store and buy that new shirt you really want that you think will make you look so fucking sexy. While supplies last. Check out Normality in aisle 3, right next to the whiskey aisle. There will be lots of stuff there for you to buy while supplies last. Anyways, folks, it is Wednesday night, hump day, almost 7:30 p.m. in Little Saigon, Seattle. Today was a fucked up day as far as the spraying goes. I don't know what to tell you. I know they say that the clouds in the skies are perfectly normal. But here in Seattle today, there was a lot of gumbus thrown up into the atmosphere. And at one point, and I actually recorded some of this, you could actually see it falling from the sky. So whatever the fuck the contrail, chemtrail, geoengineering, solar radiation management bullshit is, I don't think it is the contrail. I don't think contrail debris falls from the sky. These are high bypass jet engines. They don't do that. So yeah, it was a weird day as far as the gumbus in the sky goes. Lots of poisonous shit. Lots of chemical ice nucleation. Lots of artificial lowering of the ground temperature, despite the fact that temperatures above 5,000 feet keep going up. Oh, they didn't tell you that, did they? The other day, I had a really cool podcast with one of our listeners, AJ, and it seems like it'll be a continuing thing. I need to get the wrinkles worked out with having these podcasts with people remotely. I do apologize. I went for a low-tech approach with the phone, and it was okay, but it's not the right answer. So I'm going to be trying to get this shit worked out over the next couple weeks, and as I do, I hope to have AJ back on the Little Saigon Report, and maybe some other guests, you know, some surprise guests from beyond the Great River. The Great River that lay beyond the Great Mountains. You have to journey through the far desert to reach those lands to the east. Today, I was thinking about the concept of the abstract dam. Now, if you don't know what the abstract dam is, it's basically the idea that you can take how a hydroelectric dam works and you can abstract it. You don't even need water. Although there are some scenarios where using water might actually be kind of an elegant solution. Again, I'm not an expert in hydraulics, so this is one of those areas where someone who knows more about hydraulics would probably want to chime in. But yeah. Anywho, and actually, when it comes to hydraulics, water is not always the right answer. You know, sometimes what you want is something with a lighter weight, a high viscosity. That's kind of why a lot of the hydraulic fluid tends to be some type of an oil solution, but that's another topic. The idea was, let's say you had a water well that was a couple hundred feet deep. And it was clean and pristine and filled with water. And let's say that you had a little balloon, excuse me, not balloon, a bell-shaped weight, essentially a weight that if it contained air in its air pocket, it would be positively buoyant, which means it would ascend to the surface of the well, but without air inside of it, it would stay at the bottom of the well. And the idea is this: you have a cable to the bell, which weighs a lot. The bell goes down the well. At the bottom of the well, there's a little air hose that's constantly trickling, little pockets, little bits of, you know, a little air hose that's constantly trickling air. And so when the bell settles at the bottom, it slowly fills with air. And once it's filled with air, it recharges. So the idea is on the descent, it is discharging, kind of like the water level of a dam going down. But again, this is a constant discharge. This is not, you know, a curve. At any point in the process, you're going to get the same amount of discharge of potential energy. Anyways, I kind of like this idea because you can essentially just continuously produce the air from a solar, like from a solar panel hooked up to a cheap little air pump. You could probably even use the air pump from, like, you know, one of those, the aerating air pump from a fish tank. In theory, for an experimental model of this. But again, the concept of this is simple. Instead of using the same alternator with solar energy to raise the weight, why not just simply treat the gearbox and generator system as a separate system? And the way you raise the weight or recharge is by filling this bell with enough air that it becomes positively buoyant. And again, this is just a math problem. It's totally doable. It's not terribly complicated. And if you built this with a kind of structure, you wouldn't even need a well. You would just need a really deep pond. Like, let's say you had a pond. And let's say you're doing aquaculture, which means you probably should aerate the pond anyways. Well, you could do two things at the same time. You could have this constant aeration, from the solar panel and the air pump. But when the bell gets to the bottom of the structure, it can fill with air and then recharge. So again, this is another example of the abstract dam, the abstract storage system for energy, that doesn't require any high-tech materials and is relatively easy to fabricate. The bits and pieces that would go into this are more or less stuff you could find at the junkyard. And I will leave a link to my most recent PDF. If there are spelling errors, if it looks like junk, don't, you know, ignore it. Don't, you don't have to look, but I will leave a link to that PDF. Next topic is kind of a weird one for me. Because the next topic has to do with the kind of brutal honesty you have to be willing to crack open to the world for a number of reasons, not the least of which I would say for sincerity's sake. But I would say that this next topic is hard for me because it deals with an admission. In fact, you could say it's my dirty little secret. And it's not a proud secret. It's not something where I would say I'm really proud of myself. I can't even remotely say that. I can't say that I am proud of myself. I am not. When I try to get through every day here in Little Saigon in Seattle, when I try to survive, there are days I do things that are healthy, like going for a walk, eating right, stuff like that. And then there are days when I do things that are really unhealthy. And frankly, most of the days since September, I've kind of been in that mindset for about 2 months now. I will go to the Chevron station. I'll get myself a six-pack of Rainier beer. I'll put on the music, turn on the volcano vaporizer, and I'll disappear into a world in my head. That's one world. We can call that world one if you want to, but let's just call it one of the three. And then there's my podcast shit. And truly, folks, I do try to be as honest as possible in my podcast, even when I'm joking, even when I'm being whimsical in my little stories. I'm trying to tell a general story of honesty, though frankly, at the same time, you gotta be funny. So how fucking honest can you be? How honest can you be when you need to tell a story? So that would be world number two, the world that I express to you guys when you listen to my podcast. And then there's the third world that is currently missing. And when I say the third world, that came out funny. What, it was not intentional. But the third world is that world of work. It is a world I have not entered for 2 months. It is a world I have to enter periodically in order to pay for food, housing, and shelter. Currently, I live pretty rough, so I don't need a lot of money. And so, yeah, if I work 4 months of the year as a software engineer, if I can stomach it, I can more or less pay for most of the year. If I can work 6 months, I can pretty much just get through the year that way. And again, you're not going to get rich doing that, but that's what you got to do to survive. That's, you know, that's just reality. None of us is going to get any special fucking help, nor should we seek it out, really. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, like, go try to feed yourself if you need food. I'm not saying don't seek help. I'm just saying don't expect it, okay? I've received a lot of help from people in recent years by seeking it out, by asking for it. But I didn't really expect it. And it wasn't something that I think, you know, it's good to plan on. These are the three worlds I toss around in my head all the time. The world in my head, the fantasy world, is the one where I spend about 3 or 4 hours a day. And that world, the first one I mentioned, it's great. I mean, it's terrible, but it's great. I can be someplace else completely separate from my reality for 3 hours a day. And for those 3 hours, I don't have to put up with, deal with any of the bullshit of this wretched existence in the year 2019. I don't have to conceive of the police state. I don't have to deal with the fact that all of us have existential guilt on our fucking shoulders over all the people we've killed since 9/11. And when I say we, if you paid taxes since 9/11, that includes you too. All the fucking houses set on fire, all the fucking countries we either invaded or we plan on invading. That's the shit I don't want to think about because it's a nasty ass pile of bullshit I can do nothing about. I can't do shit about that. So I go into this make-believe world and it's completely fabricated and I know it's total bullshit. This isn't a question of whether I enter a delusional state and I don't know the delusion. I know the delusion. And the only downside to this, and I know this from experience because I've done this a few times before, is it wears off. Like, it doesn't last. Like, the most I can do is about 2 or 3 months of it. But those 2 or 3 months are the closest I will ever come, or at least so far have come, to any type of worldly peace. Now, it's important that I said worldly peace, because there is peace in heaven. And there is peace that comes from the grace of God. I believe in those things. But I'm not talking about my grace right now. I'm talking about my fucking sins. I'm not talking about the things I do well. I'm talking about one of the things I do that is literally a waste of mental energy, a waste of resources. I mean, I could be writing a book instead of going to this magical little place in my head. But here's the thing. Where I'm at right now, I don't know that books are going to matter. I don't know that these fucking podcasts are going to matter. You know, I think this conversation with AJ has been awesome because I do think knowing how to store energy, purify water, to do stuff like that, that's going to matter a lot in the years ahead. That shit will be important. But there's a lot of stuff that people invest in today on a daily basis, a lot of electronic garbage that will simply not matter. It'll be completely irrelevant. And I don't think it's in the deep, dark future. I don't think it's 100 years from now. If we somehow manage to make it the next 10 years without this happening, without everything kind of sliding underneath our feet, I will be surprised. I'll be surprised if we make it another 10 months at this point. The level of crazy is palpable. The level of madness and insanity is everywhere. It's crazy. It's getting worse. So I keep 3 worlds in my head. There is the world of the podcast, Dan, and that's all great. And that may sound wonderful, but that's not really who I am completely, is it? And then there's that fucking work world that I cannot stomach, but we all have to do. And then there's this make-believe bullshit world in my head. And I don't want to spend all fucking podcast on this, but I kind of want to just say to you guys that it's not something that you should go do. It's not something that's that easy to do. And I just don't think it's a good idea. Because eventually, if you spend your whole fucking life in some other kind of reality, you might become detached. Anyways, next topic. Sorry for being all downer there, but I need to remind myself, if only through this podcast, that I just can't burn out what's left of whatever time I have just being a bum. But at the same time, I don't really feel that guilty about it. If you were to say to me, Dan, wouldn't you want to contribute to society? I will tell you this much. Show me the society I want to contribute to. If you're talking about this militaristic imperial state, fuck you. I don't care to fucking contribute one more goddamn thing to it. The only reason why I do contribute to it is because periodically, I need food, water, and shelter. During the conversation with AJ about the abstract dam, I inadvertently used terminology that I'd like to clarify. I discussed the notion of an abstract dam or an abstract potential energy store in the context of low tech versus high tech, and that's really not the correct way of thinking about it. It's really about ease of fabrication, ease of creation. How hard is it to create something? For example, if I told you to go to just go build me in your fucking garage a battery that will power a clock for 3 months, and it has to be a lithium battery and it has to be super high tech and all that, I seriously doubt you could do it. I mean, nobody has that shit in their fucking garage. And even if they did, it would still be a hazardous undertaking. And I don't even care if it's lithium fucking based batteries. It can be any type of modern battery. Batteries are not easy to create. Even lead acid batteries are difficult to work with and can be dangerous because they involve strong acids. So really, when we talk about low tech versus high tech, we're not really talking, excuse me, when we're talking about an abstract dam versus like a lithium battery, we're really not talking low tech versus high tech. It's more like how difficult is it to build? How hard would it be for you to build an abstract dam? Like if an abstract dam is literally just a tower with a weight at the top and a pulley and a cable that goes to a gearbox that goes to a generator, if that's literally just what an abstract dam is, and the only problem you have to solve is basically raising the weight, then yeah, I would have to say that that's a relatively easy battery to construct or energy store to construct. Is it convenient to fit in your car or your pocket? Hell no, it won't. Could something like this be built at a scale where it could power your cabin for a while and that could keep that quote unquote charge for a while? Yeah, I think so. And since the charge is merely defined as the potential energy, something like this, if it's well built, it won't lose its charge. The only way to lose its charge is if it's discharging, if it's actually producing power. But in its set state, it merely is potential energy. And unlike a hydroelectric dam, as I pointed out before, it doesn't lose any of this potential energy due to evaporation. At least if you use solid weights and you don't use water in any sense. Anyways, I just thought it was important to draw that distinction. When you're thinking about technology in the future, in my opinion, it's important to think about how hard would it be to build. If it requires a huge logistical base, I don't think it's a good choice. I really don't. If it's something that you could, in fact, develop the engineering skills within your community to maintain and support, then I would say that's a good choice. And this is where you have to figure shit out. Because a lot of what's coming is going to also be about reuse and recycling. And ultimately, yeah, a lot of the quote unquote dumpster diving of civilization. We're going to be stripping circuit boards. We're going to be pulling wires out of systems. We're going to be going to the garbage dumps and the heaps for old TV sets and old computers. This is something that's going to happen as part of what the future looks like. Now, is it guaranteed? I don't know. But like I said, in the context of the whole prepping thing, if you're thinking about ways in which you're going to solve problems, the metaphor of high tech versus low tech is not the right metaphor. You need to think in terms of how difficult would it be for me to build. This hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Sir Thrival, that's spelled SUR-THRIVAL. Sir Thrival is a Buddhist prepper store in Little Saigon. Sir Thrival has been in business since 2011. Sir Thrival has a mission of making sure that every Buddhist and every Zen Buddhist and even the Hindus make it through the time of the ravaging. Sirith Rival has some special deals this week. They have an axe called the Axe of Detachment. This axe can be used to separate the head from the body of any of your non-Buddhist enemies, and yeah, then they'll be detached. So come on down to Sirith Rival in Little Saigon, the Buddhist Prepper store. And you'll get a chance to buy some stuff that will be both useful in the time to come and spiritually fulfilling, demonstrating complete mindfulness. And yeah, we sell an axe called the Axe of Detachment. If you've never read any Charles Bukowski, there's one book that I think everybody kind of recommends. It's not a long read. In fact, it's a relatively short read. It's called Factotum. And Factotum is one of my favorite books, in part because the main character, Henry Chinaski, roughly based on the life of Charles Bukowski, he's kind of one of these guys who does whatever work he can find just to get by. And I mean, he just gets by. He gets by through the madness, through the crazies, through the drinking, through the orgies, through all the bullshit he gets suckered into and sets himself up for. He is a wandering traveler of the intermittent ridiculosity of modernity of the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, but mainly the 40s and 50s, if you ask me, as far as setting goes. Factotum is the name of the book. And a factotum, if you look up the definition, a factotum is kind of like a jack of all trades, you know, a kind of person that will do anything. And with respect to software engineering, I'm kind of a factotum. I mean, and we kind of have to be. I mean, you have to be, really. But in general, I would say that's true too. At this point in my life, the only work I want is work that will pay me money. I don't want the money for free. But I also don't want the job to suck the life out of me. I don't want to end up every night coming home with this darkness deep inside of my morbid fucking broken soul. This wasn't a long topic, and I guess I am a little bit dour tonight. I don't know. The amount of gumbus they dumped into the skies basically made me want to go just buy a case of whiskey and just start drinking it. Buy a bunch of fucking packs of cigarettes. Because all of what I'm seeing, whether it's what I'm seeing, whatever the fuck they're doing in the skies, all of what I'm seeing in my quote-unquote society right now tells me society is about to go so batshit crazy that you really won't want to be around when it happens. The problem is that if you live in a city, you're right smack in the middle of it. It's kind of like saying, which part of the hand grenade does a flea want to live on? Well, the whole thing's going off, folks. The pin has been pulled. I expect to coast through space and time on a fragment of that grenade. Thank you. Human beings and perpetual disappointment. This is an interesting topic. Now, I don't want to get into a lot of really shitty French philosophy post-World War II, post-modern crapola. There are a lot of people I could mention. I do not want to talk about Jacques Derrida. I don't want to talk about deconstruction. But I am going to mention a French psychoanalyst from the 40s and 50s by the name of Jacques Lacan. Jacques Lacan was a French psychoanalyst slash philosopher of language who basically lived in the, I think he lived in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, or at least roughly that period of time, in Paris, I think. And he had this basic idea about desire, that desire was always a displacement process. Like, basically, desire is the squishiest thing in the world. For Jacques Lacan, desire is like somebody saying, if you walk up to somebody and say, "Where are you?" Like, imagine you're in Little Saigon, you walk up to some random dude and you say, "Where are you?" And the dude just looks at you and points at a mountain and says, "I'm over there." That is how Jacques Lacan defines desire, that it's always something that is displaced, postponed. And it is almost literally by definition, because of that, a perpetual disappointment. Like, we are always disappointed by the things we want. It is baked into the cake. It doesn't matter if it's a brand new car, a brand new home, a brand new wife, a brand new life. We are always disappointed. Now, I don't know if I totally agree with that, but I do think that Jacques Lacan had cornered more or less the existential abyss of the kind of modern consumer materialism. In terms of modern consumer materialism, I do think it's true. We're always trying to go out and buy something that's going to make us feel better, and it only leads to us wanting to buy more shit. We're never satisfied. Did you hear what Tim Cook said? Sales associates got to really push that new iPhone. If you don't push it, don't tell people it's the latest, you might lose your job. As human beings, we're always in that situation. It's like, I want this, I want that, I want everything. And every time we get it, according to Jacques Lacan, we are disappointed. And again, I don't know if it's guaranteed in the general sense, but with respect to shit, with respect to the stuff you buy at the fucking store or the stuff that you get from Amazon, I don't think he's wrong. Now, does this mean that I'm some type of weird hippie communist who's going to tell you not to have shit? Folks, I got an H4N Pro recorder adjacent to me. I've got a computer behind it. I've got a Roland keyboard, not an expensive one, but a good one, right in front of me. I would be a fucking hypocrite if I told you, don't buy stuff because stuff is bad. That's what every cult leader says, and I'm not a cult leader. I mean, I probably could be one if I had a, if I didn't have a soul. I don't want to spend any more time on that topic necessarily, but as stated, for the record, be careful about this materialist fucking black hole that people get sucked into. Be careful about defining your life in terms of how much shit you've accrued. And I gotta say this too, when it comes to the future, if you really want to survive what's coming, and I don't know what precisely is coming, but this is good advice no matter what is coming. Whether it's really, really good or really, really bad, best advice I can give you when it comes to the future, and this is how we connect Jacques Lacan, the French psychoanalyst, to this fucking topic of shit. When it comes to the future, your highest probability of success is to travel light. To travel light. This does not mean give up on people. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about physical shit. If you're one of these people that it's going to take days to pack up before you need to get out of town, you're probably focused on the wrong shit. If you're one of these people that's going to take hours to get out of your apartment when you need to, right before the riots get there, you're probably focused on the wrong fucking shit. If you don't know what's most important to you, literally in terms of a list, with your kids and your wife and your girlfriend and your dogs and your cat and your family and your friends on the top, if you don't have a list of what's most important to you, you're going to be very confused when you need to get out of fucking Dodge. But what I'm telling you, the fucking shit you accrued, the computers, the phones, the fucking radios, the fucking audio devices, speakers, cars, all that shit, including the fucking home, all the furniture, all the fancy clothes, or at least the ones you can't take. Everyone's going to have to learn how to let go of shit like that. I had my lesson in November 1999, and that's related to the next topic. Okay, so I got out of the Army in 1999. I was done with my commitment. I resigned my commission. I was fucking done. I wasn't officially done till 2003. That's when my fucking ready reserve bullshit was over. And I gotta say, folks, in the year 2002, 2003, those years, I was still so close to believing the bullshit that I almost went back in the Army. I am really glad I didn't, but I almost did. That being said, in 1999, I left active duty, and I interviewed for jobs. I interviewed for a job at Hanford Nuclear Reservation, which I got, actually, but I failed the Q clearance. And it wasn't because I'm a spy or anything like that. It's more like something happened that summer that I was very ashamed of, and I didn't even want to remotely bring it up. So I simply failed the clearance. It was if you don't know anything about a Q clearance is above top secret. If you want to work at Nuclear fucking Reservation Hanford for one of the fucking many subcontractors taking care of the nasty ass shit there, you got to have a Q clearance, which, whatever, I think is probably correct. I thank the Lord in heaven to this fucking day that I blew off that Q clearance. I thank the Lord in heaven to this very day that I did not get that fucking job. It would have been a great job at the time. I could have been sitting like Flynn within 10 years. I would have owned a home. I would have had money saved up. It would have been wonderful, except for the fact of all the fucking radiation. You know, and that's the thing, except for that. And of course, they'll tell you it's really, really safe. When I went to interview there, you know, at Hanford, they said it was really, really safe. Anyways, that job fell through. So I interviewed for another job, and it was for a company called Silgan Containers. And Silgan Containers, they basically made the cans. You know, they fabricated the cans. They constructed the cans for things like, you know, soup. So like, or vegetables. So they basically produce cans for other companies that would can fruit, can soup, can this, can that. They produce cans, Silgan Containers, and they worked with a lot of coatings. And when I say coating, I mean basically paint. They worked with a lot of coatings, and the coatings would, you know, splatter, and they'd get collected, and they'd end up in the fucking toxic waste drums. And periodically, these toxic waste drums would have to be dealt with. One of the days I was working there at Silgan Containers, and this was in October. This was right about, actually, this time 20 years ago. Almost precisely this time 20 years ago. I was there when they had a pickup, and the pickup was interesting. A couple guys wearing what were really nice suits. They were handed an envelope, and I could see it was cash. And that was weird too. And they loaded the fucking containers in the back of a truck, and these guys in their suits taking cash, which again, in 1999, if you're paying somebody cash to take away a bunch of fucking steel drums of nasty ass shit, there's no way to be certain what the fuck's going on. But given that Menominee Falls, which is where this was in Wisconsin, was adjacent to fucking Lake Michigan, it's entirely plausible that these motherfuckers, these fucking, gumbo, gombo, fucking hood-looking, mafia-looking dudes, were taking the fucking steel fucking barrels to a little trip to the swamp to tip them over. And I can't tell you that was the only shady thing I saw. I was training to be an operations manager at a fucking, factory, and you'd say to yourself, that sounds cool, until you see the inside. And if you understand how corrupt American business is at this point, how completely corrupt it is, then stuff like this should not amaze you. And when I talk about corruption, I'm not talking about honest people trying to make an honest living, okay? Which I don't know, there aren't that many people left like that, but the one or two people left like that, that's great. I'm talking about the crooked fucking economy that we work in today. The crooked fucking crony, regulated crocodile government bullshit economy. And in this economy, supposedly, things like the EPA exist to make sure that crazy goombas don't take a bunch of steel drums to the Lake Michigan swamp and dump the toxic waste. But guess what? All the EPA in the world, under a Democratic president, because yeah, it was Bill Clinton in 1999. All the fucking EPA in the world did not prevent these people from dumping shit. So I ended up resigning from that fucking job. It's how I ended up in Indianapolis. I mean, if you wonder, how did Dan end up in Indianapolis ever for the first time? It was after that job. I had a brother there. And yeah, I had a brother there, and he offered to let me stay with him until I get back on my feet. Of course, I had way too much shit. And when I say way too much shit, what I had was probably still about a third of what most of the people I've met in my life just chuck around. And truly, a lot of it was just fucking books. Okay, a lot of philosophy books, which I did not, throw away. But frankly, a lot of the shit that I could not store, that I did not have the money to store, a lot of stuff that some of you would consider important, like trophies from high school, like military awards and paraphernalia, like uniforms, all that ended up in the dumpster. And I didn't really think twice, folks. If you're asking, did I cry as I tossed all my memories into a dumpster in November of 1999? No. I didn't cry about it because that was just reality. I had never had in my adult life anything remotely like what you'd call stability. So this notion that I would have a magical place where my shit would always be there, that was never a thing for me. Okay? That was just the way things were. Now, what's the moral of the story related to that topic of Jacques Lacan and people being obsessed with shit? Well, here's the moral, folks. One of the things that's going to help you or hurt you in the future is not stuff like, and how can I phrase this? Is knowing what not to be connected to. There are things you should be connected to. Like, for example, I'm a Christian. I should pray. I haven't really been able to pray much in the last couple months, but I should pray. I should be connected to God. As a good human being, you should be connected to your family, your friends, the people you love. Those are good things to be connected to. In fact, those connections might end up saving your fucking life in the years to come. And then there's shit that I don't think you need to be worried about being connected to. Like your car payment. Like that video game you play. Like going to some fucking concert or buying some fucking shirt. These are not things that you should get deeply obsessed about holding on to. And let me add to that list all the tokens of history. I know, I know, I know. You'll say, Dan, all these things have memories to me. Well, maybe they do. But you're going to be choosing between your memories and your life. Because a lot of you folks have way too much shit to truck around given the future that's coming. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that it's smooth sailing as the song goes. I hope that it's Jetsons and rocket fuel futures and lunches on Mars and Amazon deliveries via drones. I really hope so, folks. But the likelihood doesn't seem real to me, and that's just where I'm coming from. I did not want to throw away a bunch of memories. I did not want to toss most of my shit into a dumpster. But the fact was, I did not have a place to put it. And if it's a choice between living or dying, having a place to sleep at night or not having a place to sleep, what is more important? No, you don't toss your family in the dumpster. You don't toss your friends in a dumpster. But when it comes to shit, crap, stuff, yeah. You're not going to be able to take it with you, maybe. And so you've got to learn how to let go. And a lot of people, they are so tied into this disappointment cycle. They're so abused by it. They don't know how to let go. They'll always be disappointed. You will always be disappointed. And yet you cannot give up on the possibility that maybe one day you won't be disappointed by the shit you buy, by the stuff you accrue. Last topic. For this shitty ass podcast, I'm not really proud of this one. But you know what? The show must go on. The show must go on. You cannot stop an Irishman from finding the worst part of a great day. This is a quote that occurred to me today. I don't know if it's original to me. I did come up with it on my own, but maybe somebody else said it a different way. But the quote that occurred to me today was this: You cannot stop an Irishman from finding the worst part of a great day. And I guess maybe this is a great way to deal with this conversation as we close out this podcast, as the hours and minutes pass by, right? You cannot stop an Irishman from finding the worst part of a great day. I don't know that it's fair to have categorical statements like this, even if they are directed at my own kinfolk. But I will say this, one thing about me, and I don't know if it's particular to me, I think almost every Irish person I've ever met, it's been generally true. The one thing about me is that I can take a sunny day and turn it into a storm. If you hand me something, a token of the joy and the happiness of life, I can find the bug that's living inside of it. It's not a great thing. I don't consider it a superpower. In fact, if anything, it's part of my doom. It's part of my damnation. It's part of my fucking curse. And maybe it's the curse of all Irish people. Every Irish person can find the worst part of a great day. Every Irish person can tell you where the gray clouds hide. Every single Irish person you ever met can identify the darkness inside of the light. It's one of these things we're really good at. And it may not be special to us. Maybe it's special to every group of people that have experienced, let's say, periods of, I don't know, persecution and isolation. But in either case, whatever the source is, give an Irishman enough time. Give an Irish man or an Irish woman enough time. And they will find every single flaw in God's creation. I don't know if I spend very much more time on this topic than this, but I thought it was an interesting quote. It just occurred to me, like, you know what, Dan? That's a little bit of reflective, introspective bullshit. I don't know that if, and it may be a rationalization, you know? It may be me trying to say it's okay for me to be all dark and negative. I don't know. Before we go, let's have a hypothetical, conversational, meandering, imaginational conversation about the Neanderthal and Homo sapien. Various family members of mine have done the whole 23andMe type testing to divine the genetic heritage of their ancient folk, to determine if their folk come from beyond the Great River, to determine if their folk were once the kings and queens of the ancient realms beyond the swamps. And that's why they get themselves tested with 23andMe. They want to find out, am I the swamp king? And so some of my family members have had themselves their DNA tested, and they've discovered that they're a little bit Neanderthal. And let's have a conversation about this. Neanderthals, supposedly, if you believe the current fossil record, they lived contemporaneously with humans, and there may have been many proto-humans. We don't know how many. The Neanderthal and Homo sapien were probably the two most successful, right? These are the ones we know about. And Neanderthal and Homo sapien roughly coexisted about 60,000 years ago. Now, I've had this conversation with people via the podcast thingy and one-on-one. Oh, here comes a helicopter, Harborview. I wonder who's having a bad day. Yeah. Harborview Medical Center, I'm on the flight path for the emergency helicopter. On that subject, though, I think the source, or one of the sources of our problems in the modern age, is the inability, outside of the context of religion, to identify who or what we are. A lot of people out there will want to tell you that we're a gentle ape, that we're some sort of gentle monkey, that we should eat vegetables and kale and tofu. And if we'd done that from the very beginning, none of the bad shit would have happened. We wouldn't have poisoned the rivers. We wouldn't have poisoned the seas. We wouldn't have poisoned the air or the land. If only we'd been, the gentle monkey eating tofu and fucking kale. Some of you believe this. You actually believe this. And this is part of the fucking problem. I'm going to tell you straight up, folks. 8 billion people on planet Earth, eating tofu and kale will still cook the Earth alive. Okay, I don't care. And if you don't understand what an assault people are upon their local ecosystem, you have never, ever lived in a fucking city. You're some fucking country mouse out in the middle of nowhere who doesn't understand all the fucking hullabaloo about people causing damage to the ecology. And that's separate from this whole climate change thing. It's just the fucking insult that having tens of thousands, if not millions of people, concentrated into a small space, it's the insult that we do. And we could just be eating soybeans and kale, and we could give up all our cars, and we would still do the damage we do. You need to listen. This is not a ramble, but this is a reinforcement. I've discussed this before. I'm going to say it again before the end of the podcast. We are not happy, shiny, peaceful monkeys. It is that belief, that bullshit Rousseauian belief, that, in my opinion, has led to our current problems. The first step to any of us fixing our shit is recognizing who and what we are. We are not peaceful, shiny monkeys. We are not herbivores. We are not creatures that go around looking for vegetables. We are creatures that look for fuzzy little creatures to eat. We are not just predators. We are apex predators. And we're not just an apex predator, folks. We are the apex predator on planet Earth. There is not another creature, either individually or as part of a group, that can kill the way people kill. And this is not just a modern thing. As I've mentioned before, think about Native Americans. Think about all the ancient peoples, basically the people of the Stone Age, when they would hunt. They would hunt, you know, buffalo. They would hunt buffalo, and they would chase the buffalo over cliffs. Now, you think about this. This is monstrous, and yet it's so fucking smart. And that's who we are. We are the most monstrous and dangerous predator to ever come along. We're not just an apex predator. We are the penultimate predator. We need to have an honest conversation about the Neanderthal and the Homo sapien, folks. Because if we can start there, we might be able to figure out our shit. It's entirely plausible that the Neanderthal... It's entirely plausible that the Neanderthal was the peaceful, happy, friendly fucking human being type person. It's entirely plausible that the Neanderthal were the kale-eating, tofu-eating nice people in the fucking woods 60,000 years ago. And it's entirely plausible that Homo sapien was a murderous, rapey, violent, lying, clever as fuck, predatorial piece of shit. What happened to the Neanderthal? You guys, I've said this before, you need to fucking take the wax out of your goddamn ears and you need to meditate on this shit. What happened to them? Well, there's two options. One, they were murdered. And option two is they were raped. Rape and murder. That's how you end up with genetic material in the Homo sapien line. You don't end up with it because of some fucking jackass Romeo and Juliet bullshit between Neanderthal and Homo sapien. You don't end up with it because of that. It's not some fucking West Side Story. It's not even as nice as what the Vikings did. And the Vikings were murderous, monstrous pieces of shit when it came to other people. They were rapey, they murdered, that's what they enjoyed doing. It's not even as bad as that, it's worse. What the Homo sapien did to the Neanderthal is essentially, well, how can I phrase this? Kind of like the way Hitler conceived of Jewish people, okay? It was a complete destruction thing. And yeah, I suppose the raping kind of made some of it a bit diffuse, because that's how you get the genetic material. But yeah, it wasn't pretty, folks. Part of our ability to somehow save ourselves is to recognize who we are. If we keep trying to tell ourselves that we're some sort of magical, peaceful monkey, we will continue to make the same stupid monkey mistakes. We are not that. We are the number one predator on planet Earth. Now, we have a choice. We can be a noble predator, or we can be an ignoble one. We can be the kind of predator that understands that one of us is capable of doing tremendous damage, or we can be the kind of predator that eats and fucks and poops and pollutes until every fucking stream is a sewer, every fucking lake is a fucking garbage dump. Those are our options, folks. And this has nothing to do with global warming. This has nothing to do with climate change. This is merely the don't shit where you eat bullshit. Until we accept who and what we are fucked, folks. And if you think you're anything but a predator, genetically speaking, in terms of where you come from, in terms of your people's heritage, especially for those of you who don't believe in God, who don't believe that there is a non-materialistic explanation for reality, for those of you Darwinian fucks, if you haven't recognized by now that we are the number one predator on planet Earth, you show me a fucking lion or tiger that has ever built a machine gun or an atom bomb. Believe me, if a tiger could build a machine gun, it probably would. If a tiger could take out its enemies at 100 meters, fucking tigers are like any other cat you're gonna meet. If a cat can eat in a lazy way, a cat will. Not that it doesn't enjoy the hunt. We're not tigers, we're not bears, we're not sharks, okay? These are nothing compared to the damage we can do. And if some people are right, and I don't know if I agree with them, but if some are right, we just don't eat everything, we eat the planet. So on this Wednesday night before Halloween, before you get all scared watching scary fucking movies, I'm just going to ask that you meditate upon a scary thought. That the only way we're going to find peace and any type of happy existence on planet Earth is if we admit to ourselves what we are, at least at some level. We're killers. We're predators. We're just like all the other predators. We like our shiny shit, and maybe unlike them, because of our consciousness, the way it works, we are constantly disappointed when we catch it. I don't know if a tiger feels disappointment once it has eaten a gazelle, but I can tell you something, humans feel disappointment all the fucking time. And that means, and this is really important, that means our desire, our hunger, the thing that drives us to go do these things is never satiated. We are so confused about who we are, our stomachs never fill up. It's something to think about. And for those of us that are Christians and are religious, we know there's more to the story. We're not just the number one predator on planet Earth. It's not just that we were made that way. There's more to the story than just that. But we have to admit this to ourselves. We have to stop this fucking bullshit. Have a happy Wednesday.